You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
This is not a criticism of this movie at all, but I do... You watch this, and at the end I was like, it feels like it should have been called Wakanda, not Black Panther, yeah. Right? Because it's like... I would even make the argument, I bet you if you were to add up screen time, T'Challa is on screen a lot less than the other characters are in this film.
I agree, and I am okay with that.
Yeah,
I am too.
I'm absolutely fine with that.
It's not a criticism.
I don't know if I would totally agree with you. I think, you know, maybe... Maybe more of a 50-50 split. Yeah.
It felt a bit on the long side, but not in a bad way. It occurs to me watching this that every place we've seen... One of the few Marvel films that I've really, really, really liked. I've liked them all. But the ones that I tend to like more are things like the latest Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy. Mainly because they feel somewhat remote from the typical storylines that we've been following throughout all these Avenger cycles.
Right.
And they also really allow us to go to other worlds outside of Earth. Wakanda, although set on Earth, for the first time, it feels like the Marvel Universe is world-building on our own planet.
Yeah. Right.
Wakanda's so new to us, I actually appreciate that it takes the time to go, this is how we do things here in Wakanda. Here's our rituals. You know, Black Panther doesn't just show up and he's the king. There's a process, and they take the time to walk us through that. And it pays dividends by the end because you finally go, oh, okay, I see how this society works.
Not in terms of, like, the previously existing plots out there, but in terms of the techniques of Marvel storytelling, this is really the culmination of those films, both in the sense of the way they've been developing, the way they do storytelling. World building, as you said, because this is really one of the most elaborate and complex and detailed world-building things they've done yet, but as well as the way they're kind of turning most of their films into ensemble films, where it really is about a much bigger cast and
Absolutely.
Making sure everybody has enough time to actually be an interesting character all on their own, which this has a sizable ensemble cast in that sense to it, and I didn't feel let down by these characters being given a lot of detail. There's almost a weird sort of, like, sci-fi James Bond feeling to this film.
Well, like, the first half of the movie almost is a spy movie.
Yeah.
And then the second half is something else. And I think because the second half is something else, the pacing feels a little weird, not necessarily bad or off, just different, because we don't really know for sure where it's going in a way that's actually kind of refreshing.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. The basic idea here is, like, for those of you guys who are like, yes, I've read Spider-Man and all that, but I have no idea what Wakanda is.
But Black Panthers scare me.
They're frightening. What is that? They don't
like,
hey,
some
white
of my
people.
Best friends are Black Panthers, I'll have you know.
The film starts off with a bit of a, you know, previously on our world, where we discover that a giant meteorite of vibranium, which is the hardest substance on the planet.
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. crashed into the Earth, specifically into the African continent, where a series of tribes built up and all sort of came to a general agreement over...
There were like, five tribes, and four of them were like, hey, we're all going to live in the...
Peace and
the,
harmony.
There was a badass, like, shamanistic king who inhabited the spirit of the Black Panther, and they all united under him, except for one tribe, the White Gorilla tribe, and they said, we'll be fucking off then, and they went to the mountains. But in the valley below, in Wakanda, this great civilization took place, and they were bounds and bounds ahead of all the other civilizations on the planet, which allowed them to look out at those civilizations, go, wow, you guys are fucked. We're going to withdraw and hide from
it. Which they were able to do because vibranium's not just the strongest metal in the Marvel universe, but it also has
neo-mystical
properties, as it were. Like it's like undefined question mark question mark question mark can do lots of shit.
It's the
field paradox of metal.
It's the you know, if as an electromagnet is to your refrigerator magnets, this is kind of like the refrigerator magnet would be a superconductor and vibranium is the electromagnet. Yeah,
the explanation for everything is, how does this work? Vibranium.
And vibranium, no fuck off.
But it works. Survive a bullet wound. Vibranium.
This spaceship runs entirely on Kirby dots.
But when we get to, you know, the modern day, we've already met Black Panther in Civil War, and he is, after his father has died, an assassination, hasn't become officially king yet, but has inherited the mantle of becoming the Black Panther.
He hasn't been crowned.
Yes, exactly. And so we get to see all that play out, and we get to see the city of Wakanda, which is a huge techno-utopia.
And really great world-building, too, because, like, as someone who's done a little world-building myself, I have actually designed some stuff with you know, using African cultures as a base point. And all of those buildings are inspired by different African cultures. You can see one that's like, oh, wow, that building looks like the temples in Timbuktu.
Well, the idea this culture grew up completely separate from the Western culture and evolved faster than it did and much more...
Strangely enough,
much
because
better.
People weren't raping, killing them, and taking all their resources.
And so the idea that, like, it has really incorporated, like, there was no break in African culture, you know? Yeah. There was like, oh, so all this grew up around the tradition, so naturally it is. It feels like it's super badass techno Dubai Africa.
It's the argument that, well, you know, those blacks are savages, you know? They don't know what to do with all these resources. And it's like, actually, if you just leave a culture alone, allow them to utilize their own resources and develop independently, they actually come out okay, you know? And Wakanda has looked out at the world and gone, you know what? Screw that. We're not touching that with a 10-foot pole. We're going to stay here in our little magical valley and pretend like the world doesn't exist.
Well, at the same time, though, they have spies. They actually have Wakandans seeded out through the world.
They're little paranoid.
And therein lies a tale, as our story opens.
They're realistically a little paranoid, as they should be. Partially because the world is first kind of caught sight of the Black Panther. They're going, wait a minute, who is this guy? How's he doing that stuff? And then we get to see there's argument inside. This is not a total utopia. Not everyone has the same vision for what should be going on with Wakanda. His own brother, played by, what is his name? The guy from, Get Out, Daniel, Danai Gurira, is that right?
No,
I don't think so.
I'm sorry.
Danai Gurira is
a woman, yes.
You're talking about
his uncle.
Black Panther's uncle.
No, but his the guy who was
the leader of the Rhino tribe.
Yeah.
I don't think they were actually brothers.
I thought they were
brothers.
Okay.
Maybe. No. See, Chris, sometimes when black people call each other
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what confused me.
Not all African royalty. Well,
anyway,
like
one of the other leaders of the tribe there is like
they're still the tribal divisions. Right. There's still the four tribes. There's like the River tribe and the Plain tribe and what have you, and all of them are on the Council of Wakanda. Yeah, they're tribal leaders.
And he's arguing peacefully that, like, look, the world is fucked up out there. Like, black people throughout the rest of the world are treated like shit, and we can't be isolationists anymore.
And Lupita Nyong'o, who is one of these spies outside in the outside world, she has actually been helping, like, liberate women in Nigeria and so on and so forth. She's been fighting in all of these little skirmishes that happen from time to time on the African continent. And, she very much is encouraging him as well. She's like, you know, we really need to outreach with science and aid, and we need to take in refugees like the rest of the world. And, you know, there's the other side of the argument is like, yeah, we should outreach, but you know what we should really do is outreach with our vibranium weapons, which can pretty much destroy any military on the face of the planet, and we just take over and run.
A side which we discover eventually, as everybody knows, Michael B. Jordan comes in here playing a character named Killmonger. I don't want to completely reveal what his ties are to the rest of the Wakandan nation, because that, I would argue, is a spoiler. But he is definitely strongly for, like, let's come in here and take over the whole fucking world.
Well, part of what makes this work is that they actually take what could have been a narrative contrivance. Oh, this guy conveniently comes from Wakanda, a country we've never seen or heard of. They actually turn it into a thematic element, as Bo is pointing out. You know, there's this culture. It's very rich. It's very developed. It has the potential to solve a lot of the world's problems. But the story dictates that they go, you know what, we're going to just stay on the sidelines And the question becomes, and Michael B. Jordan's character in particular addresses this, like, hey, what do we as a people do if we can help and we choose not to? Right. One of the more interesting aspects of this is that it actually presents us a villain who, villainous though he may be, there's merit to some of his arguments. You know sure. where he's coming from. And I think that's one of the successes of this film, because some of the Marvel villains have been a little bit weak, are just kind of generic, I want to rule the universe because that's what I do. And Michael B. Jordan's character actually comes in and stirs things up, and not only presents a threat to T'Chaka, or T'Challa, I mean, but he has other people in the tribes going, hey, this guy may have some, he may be right about this.
Well, interesting enough, when you look at his perspective, it actually matches up pretty well with the Black Panthers as an organization, like Huey Long and Black Panthers and what they try to do and what they stood for in the 60s and certain revolutionary acts and that sort of thing. It lines up pretty well. And I think there's a character that Michael B. Jordan is a character who seems like a kind of stand-in for Huey Long, but in, say, 92.
Right.
Like, transplanted to 92.
Killmonger's, yes. Yeah. He's related to Killmonger.
Yeah.
It becomes fairly obvious.
The film is definitely a very political spy thriller, but in Marvel's imaginary universe, but just enough that to apply to our own world.
Sure.
Not in a literal sense, but in a sort of cast this projector slide over our world.
Really,
and see what they're saying.
I would agree, and I have to say that really the Marvel movie that this feels most like to me is Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of intrigue. It isn't just, you know, there's some impressive fights in here, but that's not what the main, you know, story revolves around. They do have these cool little set pieces, but it's very much about the you know, the intrigues of this tiny yet very powerful in its own way nation, and you know, the intrigues around the control of the country and what it should do politically.
Yeah, but I don't feel like that's going to be distracting either.
No, not at all. Like I said, that's why it's Winter Soldier is very much a political movie and a political film in its own way and deals with, you know, structures and intrigues. And that's what you're going to get here. You're going to get some good action in it because it's a fucking Marvel movie, but,
yeah.
You know, just like you got in Winter Soldier. But yeah, I mean, this is, and it also, as we've all said, it feels more contained. There isn't a lot. You get Martin Freeman is basically our only kind of tactile link.
Yeah.
And Claw to an extent, but Claw's always been a Black Panther villain. He's like really his first
even
villain.
Even Claw's inclusion in the previous Avengers. Black Ultron. Panther's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really the only reason he shows up.
Whereas Martin Freeman is kind of that tie to the bigger Marvel universe.
Despite the connective tissue to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it does feel like its own movie, as you were saying.
Yeah.
Like,
it does struggle to make that connection.
It's very contained.
Film.
It's very self-contained, and that is a good thing.
That being said, I really wish they had gotten Sam Jackson in there somewhere.
Sequel.
Yeah, right? I pointed out earlier the thing comparing it to James Bond, and there was a scene you can't not see it, because his sister is like this, is Q, basically, from James Bond.
Yeah,
but they have that sequence. They have that sequence where he's like, oh, and here's this little gadget for you. Here's what this does, and here's that. And I was like, uh-huh. Yeah, it's James Bond.
And, you know,
we get it. There's obviously going to be, I think, a lot of stories about this movie and how it is, you know, celebratory of Black culture, of African culture.
Afrofuturism.
And Afrofuturism. Man, I wish Sun Ra were alive. He would have already dropped 10 albums in anticipation of
seriously, right?
One of the fathers of Afrofuturism. However, I also think it's worth pointing out that this is a triumph for women, too.
Not
only on screen, but many of the key technical positions are women in this film.
Director of photography.
And
director
of photography is rocking the fuck.
Co-editor.
By the way.
Production designer. They're all over the place, and you see that in the way this film treats women with respect as equal members of that society who all have a contribution to make. And yeah, it's great to see some of these fantastic actors who don't always get to be in these kind of movies. I mean, I still feel robbed that we never got the Angela Bassett Storm that we should have gotten 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's a little too late for her to do that now, but she shows up as T'Challa's mother. Yeah, there is. She shows up as T'Challa's mother, and she's great in this.
They might as well. When she takes her headdress off.
And the white, yeah.
It's the arm. They might as well just say, see what you missed, motherfucker? Yeah. See what you fucking missed?
I'm an Aurora. This could have been us.
There's so many strong actors, and specifically actresses in this thing. So much time is spent with the female members of this cast who are great in this. Like we said, Lupita Nyong'o playing T'Challa's former lover and the sort of spy operative of their secret service, the Dora Milaje. I guess they're not really secret service. They're more like...
They're the royal guard, in effect. Yeah. But they have outside operatives, which is kind of nice because they do have, you know, one character is the leader, General...
Okoye.
Okoye.
Who's actually my favorite character.
She's
Danai Gurira.
Michonne from Walking Dead, for those of
she
you
who... She steals every moment on screen.
She really does. She's amazing, and she's really powerful. And yet, Lupita Nyong'o's character belongs to the same organization, but she kind of shies away from just the, like... Whoa! I'm not the guy that wades in there with the fucking spear. That's your job. I'm a spy. I'm intelligence. Yeah. And so I thought that was a really cool, you know, division of labor, if you will.
That being said,
they both are still really
it's
rich.
Really
characters.
Awesome when she wades in there with the fucking spear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, that spear!
Oh my god, like the
vibranium spears.
There's a major car chase in here, and really, I mean, it's kind of there are two independent factions, and one is T'Challa, and one is Okoye, and it's just she's a fucking amazing.
Oh my god, yeah, totally. There's just. Even like we said, Michael B. Jordan is a fascinating villain. Claw, man, they give Serkis a chance to just chill
He rarely, he has so much fun.
He doesn't get to be, his face doesn't get to be seen on screen much these days. So, yeah, he chews every ounce of scenery when he's on.
And it's really great because, you know, if you're used to that post-Secret Wars version of Claw where he's kind of just this babbling explanation point, you really do get a shade of that going on with this version of Claw.
Even Winston Duke as M'Baku, who's the leader of that fifth tribe, who in the comics was played the villainous character Manape, but who is definitely here sort of like a, you know, not
a frenemy.
He's a frenemy.
Yeah.
Really, you know, it's one of those like, oh, it's kind of a cameo. And then you're like, oh, they bring him back. You're like, oh, it's a lot more than that. And I'm really, really glad because this is super interesting.
Yeah.
The way they managed to expand all these characters in this world, all these details about it. I'm just like, I want to play the Wakandan MMORPG right now.
Well, you know, one of the great things about this is we were talking about the Marvel formula and how it gets to be a little predictable after a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was expecting that. I thought we're going to get that third act orgy of just violence and fast, rapid editing and pixels just slamming into one another. And don't get me wrong, for those of you who love that kind of thing, you're going to get that. But it's not the universe at stake. And it's not like some alien outside threat, which are basically essentially insectoid-like stormtroopers that we typically get in the Avengers films. It's like, no, there's some actual intertribal dynamics here, and all that shit goes down, and you actually feel like it's a fight amongst people for their own country.
And not only do you care about the stakes, but you also care, you see the perspectives of both sides. Yeah. You can understand why they're fighting.
And if any of those people are to die, it's not just some anonymous hive mind creature. It's like, no, these are people you've come to know and at least, you know, appreciate, if not like all the time. And they all have a stake in how this country is going to be led in the future.
And T'Challa himself is kind of cast in this film as the position of the listener. He's the person in the middle of all these other strong personalities who's just become king. And he has to decide between the tradition, which his father had, and the many Black Panthers before him of like total non-involvement, seclusion. That's what kept Wakanda safe, in quotes. And what people are talking about now, like, hey, it's time for us to stop being that way. But with a variety of different perspectives on exactly how they did that, which I think is part of the reason the film chose to sort of have him be in more of a sort of reactive character than a proactive character as much as everybody else.
I mean, that is his arc coming to that conclusion. And that's not a spoiler. It's just that theme going through is like isolationism versus getting involved in the world. And you see all of those arguments laid out for him. I don't think he comes out one way. Well, he does come out leaning towards one direction.
He's the Woodrow Wilson of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But he respects all the views. Let's not compare him to Woodrow Wilson, the man who banned all black people from the White House.
Yes. Come on. Without the stroke and racism.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, it almost ends with, like, remember the first Iron Man where he has that little press conference? He goes,
it ends very similar.
I am Iron Man. It is that moment where T'Challa is saying, hey, here's who we are.
He's basically saying, fuck Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I would go that far.
Not so I would go that far.
There was a line in the hall.
You want a wall? I'll build a vibranium wall. It's easy.
Where they specifically call
build bridges, not barriers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like, come on.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to final thoughts. George, get us started.
I'm really excited by this. I really like that they take a previously unexplored corner of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and they make us care about it. They pretty much nail everything. I think, as a director, Ryan Coogler, he does a really good job. It's interesting that there's certain parallels with Ryan B. Jordan's character in this and Creed, which, you know, getting too far into that would be too far into spoiler territory. But I really find it fascinating the way that's woven in there, you know, figuring out like what your place in the world is and that sort of thing. I really appreciated that. And I, Wakanda forever. I give this 9 out of 10 token white guys.
Nice. Hey. Marco?
You know, I wasn't even going to say pleasantly surprised. I was really stoked for this and my expectations were more than met. I think this is the most politically and socially relevant film that Marvel has ever done, but they bring their typical light touch to it, so it doesn't become preachy, but it also plays with those themes and allows them to resonate without just, you know, and don't worry, before anything gets too deep, suddenly there'll be some action and you'll be having a great time. It's a beautifully realized world. It's a great piece of world building, and I'm almost disappointed that the next time we see Black Panther, he may not be in Wakanda for long, or maybe he will, who knows, but Wakanda's the kind of place that I would like to see on screen again.
There are jungles in the Infinity War trailer. I'm just saying.
I know, you know, let's see where
like
it goes.
A portion of it takes place in Wakanda.
And I'm hoping that's what they're building to, but you know, it's great for them to have that moment where
Wakanda, if only there was some reason for Captain America to go to Wakanda.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, but I'm glad that we got to see Wakanda as a place rather than it just be a backdrop for another Avengers mashup. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a great film. I think it's the best Marvel film in a while, and it's certainly worth your time. I give this 8.5, 9 out of 10. I give it 9 out of 10 armored battle rhinos. Well,
this fulfilled on all its promises, which is great because, I think if there was anything in the franchise thus far that could have fallen victim to its own hype, this was it, but it stuck the landing every time. It's a gorgeous movie, really well made, and ultimate kudos to Ryan Coogler because he keeps a lot of balls in the air during this. There's several very involved plots. You know, there's a ton of characters. Not to mention that he's, you know, is very much, he does make Wakanda a central character of this and, you know, needs to introduce the audience to that in a way that is seamless. And he knocks it out. I give this a very hearty 9.5 cicatrices, which are those little bumpy things that are all over Michael Jordan.
Oh, is that what those are?
Yes, it's a form of scarification.
Nice. My biggest fear when I heard they were making this is that they would be like, here's Wakanda. Okay, now we're out.
Right.
And they'd be like, you see, isn't it beautiful and it cool? Just like,
no,
let's go play somewhere interesting.
We have monorails. We're in the future.
But this is 90% of this is in Wakanda and it is a really cool place to be. That has a seemingly never ending selection of interesting, cool new niches to discover inside of it. That made me so happy the way that this is indeed like on a Game of Thrones type of way, almost world building. And it really is kind of a Game of Thrones going on in Wakanda.
Imagine if Elon Musk was the leader of the Dothraki, and that's kind of give you an idea.
You wait after he sees this movie, like announcing Elon Musk is moving to Africa.
There should be a Wakanda, damn it. Why aren't we building this?
Is there a Wakanda?
Don't worry, people, I'm on it.
But you're white.
It's like, well, details, but details.
He's from South Africa.
He is from South Africa.
But nonetheless.
Yeah. True. He's from one of those shithole countries, remember?
This is just fun and smart. My biggest issue is really there's a couple moments where the CG is a little wonky, but when you're filming big action scenes with huge crowds and so many moving parts in bright, bright daylight, it's even today, it's really hard to get that totally nailed down 100%. Some of the stuff with the rhinos, I thought in particular, was like, yeah, that looks a little wonky. There was some jangly body physics with people flying around, but hey, whatever. That's a very small complaint about a movie that otherwise is one of the smartest of all the Marvel films that definitely fits more into the realm of the Civil Wars, if you will, the much more political, the much more serious Marvel films, while still having the occasional laugh or two in there. Then say something like Thor Ragnarok or Guardians of the Galaxy, which is its own thing. Marvel is doing exactly what it needs to do, constantly expanding outwards and trying new things, but still making it all feel like it really is all part of this one big universe. The real challenge is going to be to see how these next two Avengers movies do or don't stick the landing of bringing all these to separate elements of these basically three very different types of worlds they've created into one big
Marvel insane. Infinity clusterfuck.
Exactly. Hey kids, you know how much you love it when we destroy New York? We're gonna do it again. It's like, oh
wait, there's something in the sky.
We didn't blow up all of your most beloved monuments.
This time we're gonna blow up space African New York.
That's right.
But I really love this. I give it 9 out of 10 vibranium fucking everything. I mean, like, you're like going, oh, I love your silverware. It's vibranium.
It's vibranium. Said, it's
would you like a toothpick? It's vibranium.
I mean, hey, check out my tattoo. Guess what the fuck, motherfucker? It's vibranium.
There is actually a plot point about like, oh yes, they weave it into their clothing. And you see that. People have this shiny metallic fiber. It's like, yeah, this is like my go-to-work clothing. And I just use vibranium.
It is a thing that like so much trim. Stuff is made there out of vibranium. And then like the whole thing of like Claw trying to steal this one hammer out of a museum of vibranium. It's like, dude, just root through the garbage in Wakanda. And come up with
outsiders aren't allowed into
Wakanda. No, but he said he'd been there, remember?
Yeah, he'd been smuggled in at some point.
Yeah, so it's like, why don't you just
it's a spoiler as to how he got it.
He lost the hand in Age of Ultron.
In Voltron, yeah. In what?
Ultron.
Ultron. Ultron took the hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Now he's got a cooler hand.
Yeah. I went to Wakanda and all I got with this lousy, plasma shooting hand.
Well, at least he didn't
made out of vibranium.
At least he didn't get the whole goofy face thing. So
I don't get how Claw like goes to Wakanda. Like he's been in there. He's like the only outsider who's ever been there, and he still calls them savages. Just like
Like, wait, what? I mean, that's just
you've seen the truth. They're not savages.
I'm gonna go with the. Did you notice the South African accent?
Unless it's like, because well, I have hatred, and hatred is irrational.
Yeah. He went there and saw it all, but then he got on Twitter. And he's like, oh, wait, maybe they are savage.
He's like, he's
he
not
gave
like
him a really shitty Yelp review. He's like, I lost my hand here, thing, would not recommend.
Oh, that was so savage. He's not morally reprehensible because he's an arms dealer. He's morally reprehensible because he belongs to the alt-right.
Kind of ironically, he's an arms dealer, right?
Yeah, not a hand dealer.